Hey, and welcome to the 6 Minute Mile podcast. Our guest today is a dynamic woman named Fitz Kohler. Maybe you have not heard of Fitz, but you've probably heard her. She is one of the busiest and most accomplished race announcers in America. There are very few people more skilled at keeping antsy runners entertained, happy, and fired up while idling for 30 minutes in their start corral. Before the pandemic, Fitz had also begun to use her microphone to raise awareness of breast cancer in a funny and engaging way. As a survivor herself, she had written a book called My Noisy Cancer Comeback that is a how-to manual for beating cancer and living life to the fullest. And in her spare time, Fitz has channeled her boundless energy into launching a successful children's running program, competing as a full-contact kickboxer, and teaching fitness classes to a broad range of athletes. We can't wait to hear her voice booming over the loudspeakers again at a real in-person race. Until that day, we hope that this little sample of her enthusiasm and wisdom will tide you over. Enjoy, and we'll see you out there. So thank you so much for joining us. This is so intimidating to have someone who's a professional announcer who has to listen to my terrible voice and my terrible announcing skills as part of the podcast. This is extremely intimidating, Fitz.
Well, I'm a frightening girl, but you sound like you probably could handle yourself on a microphone. So don't come steal my job. Don't even try, okay?
I highly, highly doubt anyone could steal your job. So, but no, thanks so much for making time. So we'd love to hear, maybe going way back to the early days. So I assume you were probably kind of a passionate sports nut as a kid. Were you always into sports and fitness and athletics?
I had a very athletic family. It's funny, my older brother and sister, they were athletic and they were really good. And I was athletic and I tried really hard and I rode the bench a whole bunch, but I always loved to play. It was important to me. I just loved being a part of activity.
I know you went to the University of Florida. Did you grow up in Florida?
I did. I was born and raised in the Fort Lauderdale area. And my sports growing up, I did everything from cheerleading to speed roller skating, t-ball, soccer. I threw shot put and discus on the track team. I mean, I just wanted to be a part of something and wear a uniform. Soccer was the long thread throughout my childhood, but I was willing to get in and do anything. Again, I wasn't great at anything. When I went to college, it was in grad school, I started competitively kickboxing. And that's kind of where I found my groove. That's when I was actually able to succeed. And I think it's because within a team sport, sometimes a lesser player can get lost with a coach who doesn't deem it important to play everybody. And I definitely wasn't starter material in most cases, but what I loved about kickboxing is, you know, there was no substituting me. If my name was, you know, if I was the girl getting in the ring, there was no backup plan. I loved having all of the pressure and all of the opportunity. So fighting really served me well. And then once I retired from that, I found a great passion for races. So, you know, I'm still evolving.
Now, even as a younger athlete, did you enjoy conditioning and fitness and nutrition, or did you come to that kind of begrudgingly the way a lot of kids do? Is that just want to play the sport, right?
You know, it's interesting. I loved sweating and I loved being covered with dirt. I loved having raspberries on my legs. I loved all that, but we just didn't understand nutrition properly. I mean, my poor mother, she did her best. She provided us with that all-American meal. There was always beef and buttery potatoes and some sort of veggie, canned or fresh. So she definitely did her best, but our fridges were always stocked with M&Ms and Slim Jims. And, you know, just I could go on with the list of not so healthy products. And I was a somewhat overweight kid. So I think I graduated high school close to 150 pounds. And then I lost about 40 of those pounds. I must have been 155 because I dropped down. My lowest is 112. As a fighter, I fought at 112. And then as a cancer patient, I went back to 112. And, I think I was kind of cute when I was a fighter at 112. I was not cute as a cancer patient at 112. I was scrawny and not so healthy.
Yeah, wow. And
And it sounds like you are a dedicated University of Florida fan, right? And you worked with athletes there too.
Absolutely. So all of my, all of our money, all of my degrees came from the University of Florida. I got my undergraduate there in political science with minors in communication and education. And then I had already started teaching. I started teaching fitness at 15. That's probably where we were getting at before is, you know, I was a member of the gym. I had blown out my knee playing soccer, had surgery, went to rehab. The PT said, you got to keep this thing strong. So why don't you join a gym? I did. And I thought those instructors were cool. They had the greatest leotards and I was easily swayed, I suppose. But I joined the gym and I had been working at Cinnabon at the time of all places.
Wow.
I know. And I was the girl in the back sneaking the frosting, bites of the frosting was so delicious, which is probably why I was a little bit overweight. That contributed. But I talked, my manager, Ronnie was her name. She was super mean. And eventually I got sick of Ronnie. So I went to the gym and I said, hey, are you hiring? I'd like to work here. And they said, well, can you teach classes? And I was only 15 at the time, but I said, well, I never have, but I'm willing to give it a go. And they said, okay, well, Friday night, teach a class. And thank goodness I'm a gamer because that could have been very scary. But I showed up in front of the classroom, about 30 women. And I said, hey, this is the first time I'm ever doing this. I would love your constructive criticism when we're done. And so at the end of the class, I think the class went really well and they did too. But they said, hey, next time be a little more creative with your arm movements and be a little louder. And so looking back, I always think it's hilarious that comment I got was you're not loud enough because I am obviously quite famous for being noisy. So, but I fell in love with it. And where I wasn't really good at sports, I was really good at teaching fitness. And it turned into this incredible outlet for me because not only did I love the process of teaching fitness, but I love helping people. I just, the opportunity to help others live better and longer from the get-go meant a lot to me. And I'm so grateful I get to still do that today.
And it's, now you've worked with some big name celebrities and I know you've worked with Abby Wambach, which I'm sure my daughter would love to hear about. My daughter's a 13-year-old soccer player. She would love to hear more details about that. But it sounds like you draw a lot of energy from working with, you know, international superstars like Abby, but also everyday people who are trying to get a little fitter or run their first 5K.
Absolutely. And so Abby's a great example of someone who an elite athlete who I helped become a little more elite, right? And I was trainer for many of the University of Florida athletic teams, the soccer team when they won the national championship, the tennis team when they won the national championship. And I remember allowing the tennis players to put on sparring gear and fight with me.
No.
And I also remember thinking, no way in hell am I going to let these soccer players put on equipment and punch me in the face. So, you know, Abby, as well as all of her teammates, could kick me across the room if I was holding a kicking shield for them. But those soccer players were lunatics. They would show up with their clothes inside out, their underwear on the outside. They were just really fun and really rowdy. And I do think that's how sports should be. If you're not having a good time, go do something else. And they were rowdy and silly and they were awesome. And that's why they took home the title that year. But yeah, so I love helping elite athletes become even better, but I never lie about it. My favorite people on any given day are the back of the Packers. I love the gritty people, the people who had to dig deep just to get to the start line. And I'm so grateful they give our sport of running or walking a chance. You know, I really feel, you know, for the winners, I respect them. The speedsters, I totally respect and admire the hard work that goes into that. But those people at the back of the pack, they're quite often so much terror goes into even registration. So yeah, I'm a bleeding heart and I identify with them. I'm not a speedster. I look faster than I am.
Well, Nan, I'm glad you mentioned walking because we were lucky enough to chat with Jeff Galloway recently and his, you know, part of his whole mantra is run, walk, run.
Absolutely.
You don't have to go out and grind out 20-mile runs. And like most middle-aged runners, I'm dealing with a kind of a tweaked knee and I'm feeling like a loser. I'm like, oh man, is this, you know, what if I only go run 2 miles and then walk for 4 miles or something? That feels like such a, such an easy thing to do. That's not a real workout, but Jeff's attitude, and sounds like your attitude, is no, get out there, do what you can do and get it done. And, you know, maybe you'll be back to running 12 miles, but in the meantime, do what you can do.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting to me. I love when people ask the question, can I walk? And I feel like, gosh, there's no person out on the course making sure you're bending your knee and propelling yourself off the ground. There's got to be air or you're out of here. There's no buzzer if you walk. So it's very sweet when people ask permission. But, you know, I've gone from elite athlete to sick cancer patient. And, you know, I'm just proud of doing whatever I can do. And yeah, even before cancer, I walked a heck of a lot through my events. And I'm not embarrassed about it, even a little tiny bit. My races are about me. It's not that I don't care what other people think, and I don't, but it's not my business what other people think of me. So I show up and I do my best, or I decide to take it easy. I don't care. Our running community is so much fun and so positive that do you care how fast anybody else is going?
Of course not. Right. Yeah.
No. So I would never take away from the pride I should experience by going from start to finish, whatever the pace. And I hope everyone takes that home, is don't take away from the pride you earned by just being out there. Every single time you conquer the distance is a big win. And even if you get cut short someday, I think it's a big win that you got out there and you went as far as you did.
Love it. All right. And so how did you wind up getting into the race announcing business? You're famous for a lot of things, but you may be most famous among our audience. Probably two-thirds of the people listening to this have heard your voice at the start of a race or the finish of a race. But how did you ever get into that? That's probably not something, you know, when a little girl grows up, she says, oh, when I grow up, I want to be a race announcer. How did you ever come up with this career or part of your career?
Right. So it evolved pretty naturally for me. So as a sport performance expert, I've always made the rounds helping athletes become better. And I was doing that for Run Disney. They had hired me to show up for quite a few race weekends to teach my strength training for runners clinic, which is the same stuff I would teach MEB and the same stuff I would teach a new athlete in our sport. I was teaching that clinic and a few others, but their announcer, Rudy Novotny, which he is the voice. Everybody loves Rudy. And I, of course, he's my favorite race announcer. He's incredible. He was the Run Disney, you know, big deal announcer. But anyways, he was also in charge of introducing people or introducing the clinicians throughout the day at the expo. So he would introduce me and then he'd hang around and listen. And it turns out he would keep saying, you're such a great speaker. That was so great. It was so engaging. I'd say, thank you, Rudy. And I really love him. He's such a fun, everything about him is wonderful. But eventually he would say, you know what? We have a lot of people who come and talk. You're our only real speaker. You're our only real engaging speaker. And I would say, well, thank you. And then eventually I said, well, I don't know what to do with that information. You keep saying it, but thank you. And he goes, you know what? I know what to do with the information. I have an event in Orange County, California in a few months. I need a co-announcer for. Would you be interested? And I said, well, like I normally do, I go, I've never done that before, but I'd be willing to give it a go. And so he reached out to that race director, Gary Kutcher, and put us in touch. And Gary looked at my resume. We had a short conversation. He said, Fitz, I would love to have you come announce OC. And I think that was back in 2014. And so everything went really well. It's funny. We hosted the kids races the day before together, and we have 10,000 kids out there. It's big fun. And kids are something I specialize in. So that was not an issue at all. But on marathon morning, that Sunday morning, we had a few thousand marathoners, and Rudy and I did the whole pre-race shtick together, where you recognize your sponsors, you welcome the audience as they're showing up, you tell them about the course you're about to conquer. And then we whipped our marathoners into a frenzy. He yelled go. And then our 9,000, 10,000 half marathoners come up. And again, we go through the spiel, whip them into a frenzy, but they're in corrals. So we let the first 1,000 runners go together. He yells go. And then he says, bye-bye to me, because he's got to get in the car and drive to the finish line. And so it's the first time in my entire career that I ever had pause. I just stared and looked at him because it was me and the other 8,000 runners. And I just had the pause. He said, "You're going to be great." And I turned around and I just let her rip. And it turned out that we had a blast. And what I love about not only that event, but I find in most events that are seated by corral, seated by pace, the further back we go, the more outrageous the party. I mean, these people danced and cheered.
Oh, yes.
You know, there it's Orange County, California, but we had such a blast. It was mega fun, mega loud, and I was mega proud that I had done a good job on my first event without Rudy. And when I went over to the finish line, probably within about 5 minutes, the race director, Gary, came over and said, "Hey, can you come back next year?"
No, I love it.
Absolutely. And within just a few short months, I had a handful of other races I was hired to announce, and it's just kind of steamrolled from there. And I tell you what, I do believe out of all the race announcers in the entire country that I have the best schedule. I love my events. They're some of the biggest, the best, the most prestigious, the most charming. I got Wonder Woman, for crying out loud. I have the Wonder Woman Batman series.
How fun is that?
Buffalo, Philadelphia, Los Angeles. So I could go on forever, but I love what I do. And it's one of the coolest things that I was introduced to this profession. And I just love it desperately.
Now, you mentioned, so some of this, you have to hit certain points, right? You have to give some logistics on the race. You have to mention sponsors.
Yeah.
You have to let people know when the national anthem will start. But how much of the rest of that is scripted? Most of it's ad-libbed, right?
For me, it is. And some race announcers just simply go by a script. What I request are bullet points. You know, tell me who the main sponsors is, a little blurb about them, perhaps. And then I weave it in. I have a strict policy that I never talk at people. Right. I talk to them. I always want to feel like I'm in a conversation, whether it's one-on-one or one versus 30,000. I respect the people that have shown up at an event. And so, you know, reading is not a fun time. And it's important to me that everyone knows what's going on, but it's important that as they gather, they start to feel like they're a part of the team, you know, that they are wanted. If you came alone, if you arrived alone, you are no longer alone once you get there. You're my friend. Hopefully you start meeting the people around you. And if I have the ability to make you laugh, perhaps I take away some of the pre-race anxiety, you know. And if I also do my job getting you cranked up, perhaps you go get that PR or you win the race.
Absolutely. And how do you avoid coming back to the same cliches? I mean, I've heard you in action and you're good. You don't just come back to, "Are you ready?" or "Let's go." Or "Are you fired up?" You have a great creative stream of stuff. And it's amazing that it's not scripted, or, you know, you're not looking at note cards saying, "What's the next pump up cliche I'm going to hit these folks with?" How do you come up with this stuff?
Well, A, that's really nice. And thank you, because I do rely on a few old favorite jokes where there are some runners that show up to, I feel like, all my races, and they're probably going, "Wah, wah, wah. I heard that one before." It's easy to be creative when you're in a new environment. You know, every time I show up to the Los Angeles Marathon, there's probably 70% different faces. You know, those athletes, if I'm talking to them, it means I'm looking at what they're wearing and I'm looking at the smiles on their faces. And, you know, there's always a new topic of the day to talk about or a new song on my playlist. So yeah, I think the fact that I am so comfortable with them and I consider them friends, I never have any stress level. There's no anxiety that I feel like we're just chit-chatting and hanging out, right?
I love it. And then tell us about, switching gears a tiny bit here, but I'm fascinated. We have three kids and particularly in this time of Zoom classes and kids, sometimes our kids, it'll be 3:30 in the afternoon and they're still in their pajamas. They've been to school all day on Zoom classes. Yeah. I love your morning mile idea. Tell us a little bit about that. How'd you come up with that idea? What is it exactly? Is it still growing? Can it still work in times of pandemics and quarantines?
Yeah. So long story short, when my kids were little, there were a few local schools in Gainesville, Florida that were allowing their kids to run before school. And they were run differently, but they were all loosely called the morning mile. And I kept thinking, gosh, I wish my kids could do that. That sounds like a really good idea. I wish my kids could do it. And then all of a sudden, my fitness professional light bulb went off. And I thought, gosh, I wish all kids could do that. That really would solve a lot of problems, not only with health and obesity, but exercise in the morning turns on your brain. It allows them to focus better, behave better. The studies are endless on how early morning exercise will impact the rest of your day, especially as a child. So I went to each school and said, hey, tell me about what you're doing. I gathered their best practices. I added my own. I made sure we had equipment, rewards, music. Music is my right-hand man, no matter what I've done as a fitness professional. So, you know, there were certain elements that I knew would be crucial to its success. And then knowing that schools don't tend to invest a lot of money in health and fitness, I went to corporate America and said, hey, this is what it's going to cost to get this school up and running with XYZ equipment. Would you sponsor these programs? And they said, yes. And so
What corporate brand wouldn't want to associate with moms and parents and kids? Yeah.
Well, I like the way you say that. So anyone who wants to sponsor Morning Mile, it's morningmile.com. But
I know sponsorship sales is always 10 times harder than it looks, but yeah.
It is. But I've been blessed with many companies that have reached out. If a company sponsors one Morning Mile program, they're very likely to come back and say, hey, we want to do it again. That payoff was tremendous. Right. Not only with pride, but loyalty from their customer base. So since then, I have over 400 Morning Mile programs running at various schools and camps throughout the USA, Grand Cayman, Canada, and Japan. And while I love being international, my main focus is American kids, and I don't care what color they are or where they pray or how wealthy their parents are, because rich parents are just as likely to raise overweight youth. So, you know, I just love kids, and the more we can get moving in the morning means a lot. So the Morning Mile is the only before school walking program that invites every child to participate every single day of the school year. It's a 30-minute window. They can come do as little or as much as they want. We also invite the family. We also invite faculty. So it's big picture fitness. It's not a race. We do reward them for miles accomplished, but it's not a race, and we don't isolate genders, only girls, only boys, only kindergarten. It's everybody every day. And I'm a big picture fitness expert. That means a lot to me that nobody has an excuse and everybody feels welcome.
And do kids normally do it right on the school grounds, or you do multiple routes around the school? Yeah, because you don't want them branching out into the neighborhood and crossing
schools. No, and you know what? Some schools have a la-ti-da fancy track. Good for them. Some of these kids are just running loops around the playground or around a series of portables. Doesn't matter to me as long as it's a safe place. Great. In California, I've got some. In Venice, we've got schools that do it in a parking lot that's shut down. So it's just a fenced off concrete area, but whatever, those kids run and sweat and smile like the others, and many of them walk. So I love all kids, and I want them all moving in the morning. So hopefully all of your listeners will be motivated and they'll say, I've got to get my kids moving in the mornings. Morningmile.com.
No, I love that idea. That is so cool. Yeah. Well, right. And even if you're in the parking lot, if you're cranking great tunes and kids are, you know, it's a community atmosphere, and love that. So, and then take us to, we watched your video, which we instantly had a lump in our throat when we watched your video that you recorded out to your fans and followers announcing that you had just been diagnosed with breast cancer. But for those who don't know the background of the story, walk us through a little bit of that. You had a clean mammogram just weeks earlier, and then you discovered a lump, but I know this is a long story, and it's a wonderful book. We understand. We haven't read it yet, but we are. But the reviews are excellent. But walk us through that story, and as a fitness professional, how that affected your life and career.
Yeah, interesting. And I can start by saying my platform as a professional has always included annual exams and self-exams. And personally, I've always felt that, you know, if I had just one cancer cell on my body, I'd want to know about it right away so I could crush it instantly. Right. And so I had been getting annual pap smears and skin checks and vision checks and mammograms, et cetera. And so December of 2018, clean mammogram, put a little video on Instagram. It's still there. Look at me, clean mammo, go get yours. Less than 7 weeks later, I was at Disney Princess Weekend to run. And I was in my hotel bathroom. I think I was naked in my hotel bathroom, and I rubbed my underboob. I did one of these. And if anybody is thinking, what's an underboob? You know exactly what an underboob is. But I had an itch, I suppose, the itch that saved my life. And all of a sudden I felt it. It felt like a bean, like a hard black bean. And I thought, uh-oh. And I instantly knew I had breast cancer. I was like, ah, crap. So this is the most important thing I did. And if people take nothing from this podcast interview, they need to take this is when I found the lump, I did not hesitate. I did not hem and haw. I did not Google breast cancer. I did not call my mom or my friends and ask what I should do. I picked up the damn phone. It was 30 seconds later, picked up the damn phone, called the damn doctor, made the damn appointment. And I use the word damn because it's that important.
Yeah.
I was taking it seriously. So were they. They tried to get me in that afternoon, but I said, I'm out of town. So 3 days later, I had the appointment. 3 days later, I had the mammogram and ultrasound where they said, yeah, we see the lump and we also see three swollen, hard swollen lymph nodes. And with that, I just lost it. I had been fairly stoic. I'm good at compartmentalizing things. So I just decided, okay, I will deal with the lump as it comes. I didn't fret over it. I just, you know, focused on whatever was ahead of me. And I didn't even tell anybody. So I'm there with this lump and lymph nodes and the mammogram, and now nobody knows. So I was able to see a surgeon that day. I had a biopsy the next morning, and because things were moving so fast, thankfully these doctors in my community were very concerned about the rapid pace at which this tumor and these lymph nodes were lighting up. So I do believe I started chemotherapy 2 weeks later, maybe less. It's all a little foggy. It's there in great detail in the book, but I can tell you that it was absolutely terrifying. And I'm the most positive person in the world. I genuinely feel positive and confident with good outcomes. Like the Gators will always win no matter what. Team USA will always win gold no matter what. So I'm that girl. But the second that I heard lymph nodes, I thought, certainly I'm dying. And the reason being is because I am exhibit A of all that's healthy, right? I do all the right things or almost all the right things. And if it would can happen to me, it can happen to anyone. And I have this beautiful career and this beautiful family, and I'm going to make that perfect tale of tragedy. So I'm definitely dying. And it was gut-wrenching. I mean, I'm not a crying person. I always look at people cry and think, suck it up, soldier. But man, I turned into a weepy mess. And yeah, it was hard. It was terrifying. And, you know, the things that ensued made it even more scary. But I'm really excited that I got to tell everyone about it in the book. You know, I had this, once I was convinced I was not going to die, that helped, but I would have kept it to myself. I'd like to keep my private life kind of private, sure. But I knew I was going to stand on stages bald in the very near future. And I didn't have the opportunity to hide that. I couldn't have put on a wig anyone would have believed was my actual hair.
Right.
So I told the closest people, my family, my very close friends. And then as you saw, I made that very difficult video, and out of my decades worth of experience on TV, that was the weirdest thing I'd ever done. Yeah.
I believe it.
Yeah. So, and as you see, I look back and I think how cute. I was so cocky. You know, I just said, I don't want your pity. You can wish me well, but I'm going to be at my races and I'm going to perform as expected. And I look back and think I had no idea what I was in for. But I'm so glad I made that decision. And I know that the running community was part of my cure.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was.
Well, but it's so good that you chronicled it in the moment too, because it always looks different in hindsight, right? And so in hindsight, we know that it's a happy ending.
Yeah.
But that's what was so raw about that video. We'll post a link to it, but you can see it in your eyes and your voice that this is, you know, this is not obvious what's going to happen here. This could be bad, right? And obviously something you never dealt with personally in your life before. And all that emotion comes through in that video. It's really remarkable.
And it's interesting. It's interesting to me because I'm a servant, right? I'm a service provider. I take care of people. I teach them things. And then especially as a race announcer, my job is to love on people and make them feel special and accomplished. And, you know, clearly me having a smile on my face and joy in my heart goes a long way to doing that. So it was uncomfortable being A, the focus of attention, because my business is not about me. And then also being someone who was laying some difficult, sad news. You know, I had a lot of my athletes say, I cried that day, you know, I got your news and I cried. And I just thought, I can't believe I made people cry. You know, it was a real burden that I wasn't happy with, as you can imagine.
No, a lot of people in roles like yours feel that way, right? Where they say, no, wait, I'm the one who's picking other people up. I'm the one who's supposed to be taking care of family members or people who need help. I'm not supposed to be the needy one. And that's a hard part of the emotional journey, isn't it?
Oh, it was very difficult. And so, you know, going past making the announcement, the other thing I decided was no matter what was going on with me, I wasn't going to burden my public, my audience, whatever, my runners with it. And so if you go back over the history of any social media post I made, any appearance on a stage, I just said, I put a smile on my face and said, I'm fine. Everybody thought I was great. I never once told anybody, hey, I was just hospitalized with transfusions or, hey, last night I slept on the hotel bathroom floor because I was so sick. Right. And then I put on my Wonder Woman tutu and now I'm doing this thing. But the great, you know, the exciting part of the book, I think, is the contrast between, you know, just that sleeping on the hotel bathroom floor and then hitting a start line like, you know, Mick Jagger type thing. And then I got the chemo brain. So it just fell out of my head. What was the other thing I was going to say? I don't know.
Well, I wanted to add, so you took the microphone and you would be at the start and with the bald head and all its glory. And what was the reaction of runners at that point? That's not something they expect to hear, right? You've been this picture of health, literally, that's your job, is to be one of the healthiest people in America. And then you show this vulnerability at a time when they may be at their peak fitness, but that sort of dichotomy and is really intriguing to me. And how did runners react when they saw this bald-headed woman who was, you know, maybe a little bit paler and thinner than they'd last seen you? What did they say to you? How did they get back to you?
So that's a lot of questions. I'll start by saying that that's okay. It's amazing the power of a bald head has to silence 20,000 people. You know, you get this really rowdy crowd and all of a sudden my hat comes off and then hush, you know, and I start the book off that way where people are going, oh my gosh, I think she has cancer, you know? So it's interesting. I don't like victim mentality. I certainly don't want to look like a victim. I didn't like that the second people saw my bald head, that they knew, you know, I don't like being weak. I'm a strong girl. But I also chose not to wear the wig or a hat because they felt uncomfortable and they made me sad. You know, I considered wearing a wig and then I just decided, no, this isn't for me. I did wear hats on a regular basis at races because wherever I announce is apparently the coldest place in the world that morning. There was a few times where I deliberately said, okay, I'm not going to wear a hat today. And in fact, my first time on a stage post hair loss was Encinitas Half Marathon in California. And nobody had seen my bald head. I hadn't put it on social media, but I decided, you know, out of the 6,000 athletes we had that day, many of them would one day be bald from cancer treatment. And I wanted them to know that it's okay. You know, I didn't want them to feel like they had to hide. So there were quite a few times where I took off the hat just simply, and I was cold. I decided, okay, I'm just going to freeze my face off because I want these people to have this to look back on. But you know, it was important as I went on that, number one, I did not steal attention from the race, that I did not become the subject of the race. And so, you know, my race directors, all of them said, hey, if you want to do a message, go right ahead. And so I would have people, we'd be talking about sponsors and the course and blah, blah, blah. And then I'd say, okay, guys, I've got a 60 seconds spiel. And I take off my hat and say, just so you know, blah, 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 clean mammogram 7 weeks later. I rubbed my underboob, found my lump. I have breast cancer. I had chemo Monday, but there's a light at the end of the tunnel for me. And that's because I saved my own life with that self-exam. So folks, you have to squeeze your stuff. If you have a romantic partner, you should squeeze their stuff. If you have neighbors you feel comfortable with, you should squeeze each other's stuff. And, you know, I tried to do it in a fun way. And usually people would have a good laugh at the squeezing each other's stuff. And then I wrap it up and move right along. So, you know, fortunately, many people in after those little speeches would say, hey, I scheduled my exam. And thank you for giving me the encouragement. But yeah, it's just a weird year, right? Like very weird year. The whole thing was wonderful and horrible at the same time, but I wouldn't change it.
Well, and you know, you said something earlier about that this was progressing pretty quickly and moved to your lymph nodes. And if you had not done that, so not only it's great that you did the self-exam, but then you acted on it so quickly. I know so many people who would just say, gosh, I hope it's nothing. Or you call your best friend and she says, oh, you know what? Don't worry about that. I had 3 years ago and it wasn't anything. You know, go see your doctor in the next 2 or 3 weeks or something maybe. But you hate to think about it, but that it's, you're a great lesson for people to say, you've got to act now. I know you've been really articulate on that point on the stage to say, hey, you got to do self-exams, but then you got to act on it really quickly too.
Yeah. And that's why I'm very pointed and abrasive with my delivery. And I'm like, call the damn doctor, because if I would have waited to the follow-up mammogram, I'd be dead. There's no doubt I would be dead. And in fact, I probably never would have gotten to the next mammogram because my organs would have been riddled with cancer and I would have started to have breathing problems, et cetera, that sent me to the doctor. So cancer's ugly, cancer's mean, especially right now when they cut off annual exams because of COVID. These great big heroes that were just so smart and saving our lives by preventing us from getting our annual exams. You know, cancer doesn't wait for a virus, right? So all of these people who would have been diagnosed in March, April, May with stage one will now find out as a stage three or four nightmare. I was just at the cancer center doing a little video project with them, and they said, you know, cancer diagnoses are down. Cancer occurrences are not down. But the diagnoses are down.
Yeah, that's scary.
People are showing up with far more advanced cancer than they would have if our, you know, genius, I'm going to call them tyrant governors, hadn't shut down society. I mean, how do you shut down medical exams? It just is very upsetting to me. So if anyone's listening and you had your annual exam canceled, make the appointment today and be aggressive about it, because it actually matters. It could save your life.
And now I have to believe your high level of fitness helped in your recovery too, didn't it?
Yes, it did. And, you know, I can start by telling folks that it's important to be battle ready, right? We don't want to live in fear that cancer's coming or we're going to get hit by a bus. But the fact of the matter is cancer might come or you might get hit by a bus, and a strong, fit body will recover and rehabilitate far quicker than a body that was frail or sick or unhealthy to begin with. So battle ready, right? You always want to be as strong as humanly possible. And as I travel around these races and other places teaching about strength training, I always say, on any given day, rather be stronger or weaker. You know, is there a benefit to being weaker? The answer is not no. It's a hell no. There's no benefit to being weak. So make sure you do the strength training. Make sure your heart and lungs are strong. Make sure you're... And so I was, again, looking back, very cute. I thought that, oh, I'll get my chemo number one, and then I'll take a few days off just voluntarily, and then I'll go right back to the gym. Well, P.S. chemo number one, took a few days off, and then I exploded. I became chemo sick. I was violently ill for a very long time. And after the first two rounds of chemo on week number three, I was able to kind of start doing a little bit of exercise. At some point I was wiped out. I had 3 months with zero exercise at all. I didn't lift a finger towards a dumbbell. I never set foot in the gym. I was sick and weak, and any energy I had was on getting on planes, going to my races, or, you know, doing my best with my children. But when I started coming out of the mean chemo fog, I started stretching more in the shower. And then I went into my neighborhood pool and I stretched in there. And then I started wiggling my arms around in the pool. And this is a girl who was a competitive kickboxer. I used to kick people in the head for fun in front of thousands of people. I could pop into a half marathon without training for it and do right. just fine. And I was never fast, but I could always finish. And then there I was just wiggling my arms in the pool, feeling like in the shallow end of the pool, no less, just feeling grateful for that. But because I chose baby steps and I was gentle with my progress, I was able to continuously push the envelope, move forward. And, you know, it's interesting when I first stepped back in the gym, it was like a fish being thrown back in the water. I felt like Fitz Kohler again. I thought, yay, I'm here. And then I got on the machines or using the dumbbells that I used to use, but I was using maybe a quarter of the weight. Right. And it made me think about all the people who show up at the gym and are embarrassed about I can't do as much as the other guy. Well, how does anybody know what you used to right. do or what you should be? Nobody right. at all. People might've been looking at my bald head, but right. nobody was looking at, you know, the amount of weight I was lifting.
Right.
My progress was nobody else's business. So again, I started off slow and I just did what I can without doing any harm. And, you know, the pool is a great place for anybody struggling with any sort of ailment, whether it's a broken Absolutely. Bone or a muscle or, you know, an illness. It was gentle and chemo made me heat sensitive. So I just baby stepped it. There's at the end of each chapter in my book, I call them fitness logs since I'm a fitness girl, but I talk about my progress or my lack of progress with fitness. And then I detail how I built myself back up. And I live on a hill. And it was interesting because after the meanest part of chemo and I started exercising again, I'd walk my dog down to the bottom of the hill. And then I would have to call to get a ride back up the hill to my house because I couldn't make it up the hill.
Oh. And so how long was that period? So your diagnosis was in February, is that right? 2019?
Yeah.
How long before you could say run a mile and how long before you felt as if you were kind of back to 90-95% of your old self?
Okay. So you won't like the answer on the run a mile. So I did walk in the fall, you know, late February is diagnosis. In October, I walked a 5K in Los Angeles. I walked slow, That's right. but I walked it. Yeah. And then I don't think it was until this February or March, I had been reading Mike Riley's book, Finding My Voice, which is very inspiring. And it's a fantastic read. If you haven't picked it up yet, get it. But I was reading about his success stories. And I thought, you know what, I'm going to get on the treadmill and see if I could run. So I did. I got on, I ran a quarter mile, I got off, but I think I ran a 5K. I mostly ran a 5K in April or something like that. So, you know, I feel good.
So a year later, you ran a 5K.
Yes. And roughly. Can I do a little bragging?
By all means, please.
Okay. Cause I'm really proud of this. I had my final round of chemo May 11th. So first six rounds, we call them the mean chemo and they lived up to that nickname. Yeah. But then I had 15 more rounds of another chemo.
Man.
That was, I know it's obnoxious. So it was total 15 months, but this other chemo was not as toxic as the original group, but it was still very difficult and I lost a lot of weight and blah, blah, blah. So I didn't have an easy ride of any of it. So I finished chemo May 11th and then—
Of this year now.
Of this year, yeah, just five months ago when I finished chemo.
Into it, right.
So I get my port out a few weeks later and many times a doctor will leave your port in. That's where they infuse the drugs. They put it under your skin. They leave it there. It's not a party, but it's not terrible either. Anyway, sometimes they'll leave it in for a year just to make sure the cancer is gone. But my doctor said, no, you're cured. Let's get you out. Let's get that out of you. So they take out the port June 3rd. On June 13th, I went out and I did a Spartan 5K.
No.
I did. Talk about being proud of yourself. We had hip high flooded terrain to run through. I laughed the whole way. I couldn't lift up any of the heavy things because I was super scrawny, but I did it. I went and I crawled in the mud and I swung from ropes and I was so happy. And then 2 weeks later, I went and did a mini triathlon in Claremont and I hyperventilated at least 50% of the time. I was dead freaking last. When I was on the bike, I was the girl with the police car behind her with the little light flashing. That was me.
I hope you had a t-shirt that said, I just finished chemo, give me a break.
There was a volunteer trying to help me as I was hyperventilating up this hill. I couldn't even speak to tell him this is why I'm so pathetic. But anyways, I did that. And again, dead freaking last, hyperventilated almost the whole way. I couldn't have been more proud of myself. And as I was riding that damn bike, I'm not a good cyclist, but I'm riding the bike around this giant lake thinking the struggles I'm experiencing right now are so much more awesome than the struggles I had the year prior. Right. So
right.
Perspective, you know, before it was, I was violently ill and I was getting blood transfusions and just a sick, sick person. This day I was sucking wind because I was on a bike out near a lake with all these cool athletes. So did that. And then 2 weeks later I learned to surf. So I am getting after it and I love life. I love life before, but even more so now. I've got a real high priority on quality of life. And I also just bought myself a very old Jeep Wrangler because that's cool. A big thing to quality. So yeah, I'm happy to be alive. Right.
All right. And now as people have listened to you for a few minutes, they will not be shocked with the title of your book, My Noisy Cancer Comeback. But I mean that in a wonderful way, of course. But what inspired you to write the book? There's so you're really effective at so many different forms of media. Why sort of an old fashioned book?
So at the very start of chemo, I think I had just gotten past round number 2, and the side effects that were kicking in were so abundant and so weird. And all I kept thinking was, how come nobody tells you this? I mean, when you start chemo, they go, okay, you're going to be sick and you're going to be bald, right, and you're going to be tired. Nobody tells you that your fingernails may rot off on while they're still on your hands. Nobody tells you natural hairs out and your nose runs like a faucet. Nobody knew that when I lost my hair, I would have a 6-inch tan line going straight down the center of it like a skunk, because I had always parted my hair in the middle.
Interesting. Wow. Never would have known that.
No. And so I'm just scratching the surface, but when the side effects became so extreme and then they were just funny, you know, I have a kind of a very sarcastic sense of humor. And then, so I started finding great humor in all of the horrible things that were happening to me. And I thought, nobody tells you this. And once I had published on the book and I knew it was completely done, I started reading a few other people's memoirs on their cancer journey. They tell almost nothing. They tell about the diagnosis and then, hey, I was cured, but they don't get into the gory details. And I thought people deserve the gory details, the juicy details. And then I thought they would get a kick out of it. I thought people could have a good laugh at my expense. And so that was the first thought. And then the other thing is when my cancer treatments collided with my race announcing schedule. And again, I had 22 major events. I didn't miss one flight, one event, one hug at a finish line. But again, nobody knew I was sick. I just kept telling everyone, it's fine, hunky dory. So now people can go read behind the scenes and know that, you know, when my flight landed in Orange County for that marathon, I was driven straight to a hydration salon for IV fluids. And at Buffalo, the nurse came with IV fluids just to keep me upright. I mean, we had to do all sorts of things just to keep me going. But this is the magic of it all, is that I had all this medical intervention to keep me functioning, and my doctors were fully in support of it, which is great. They didn't have a choice. I wasn't going to stay home anyways, but they were excited about me living fully. But my greatest gift was my runners. You know, I would go from crazy sick and just thinking, oh, I can't even sit up. The second I stepped on a stage, it was like someone hit my on switch and I had runner generated go-go juice that was adrenaline. And man, I was able to function at such a high level as long as I had a microphone in my hand and a runner within my view. It was awesome. It was so good. It was so good. So
I'm fascinated by that point though. How do we bottle that elixir, right? That makes you rise to the occasion, because it's in all of us, right? Whether we're recovering from cancer or overcoming other stresses or just want to perform a little bit better. But I'm sure you've thought about this 1,000 times. How do you regain that? How do you get that? Like, hey, it's game day. I got to play.
And you know what? That's one of the great purposes of the book. So I talk about perspective a lot, but I think it's so important to have a passion. And so I'm one of those lucky people who I just am so crazy excited about my work and the people I work for. But maybe you aren't a professional race announcer with thousands of runners you love. Perhaps you love painting, or you love animals, or you love photography. Whatever it is, when you're going through hard times, it's important to force those things into your agenda. And, you know, and I love animals. When I couldn't be out at the farm because I was stuck in a chair at chemo, I was watching that channel, The Dodo, on Facebook. The Dodos, all these cute little animal videos. So I made sure that I had joy in my life and things that I loved. And, you know, whether you suffer from depression or you have MS or, you know, someone you love died, okay, it's okay to grieve. And I tell you what, I cried almost every day of those 15 months. I would cry alone in my bathroom. I would cry alone in my car. I was trying not to bring any, I was trying not to burden anyone with my basket case issues, but I still also would pick up the phone and look at the dodo, or I would interact with one of my runners. So yeah, you have to force in nice things for you, and don't feel guilty about doing that because it matters. They matter.
Oh, that's really important. And the book has been well received, right?
I think so. Yeah, I've been great reviews so far.
That's very cool. And Mike, I think Mike Riley's even kind of give, even though he's your arch rival as a competitive race announcer, that, you know, even he's complimented the book.
Oh, on the contrary. I tell you.
I know.
I love Mike so much. And this is what a prince he is. And I'm so blessed that I think we're all so fortunate that the great majority of people in our running community, as our colleagues, are generous to a fault. Mike and his son, Andy, you know, Mike had been through the self-publishing process the year prior, and Mike and Andy held my hand. They both spent a good couple hours on the phone with me each, guiding me through the process.
You know, Oh, that's so nice to hear.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I don't know what the product would have turned out like without their guidance. So the Rileys deserve all the love in the world. And I hope everyone goes to buy Mike's book, but yeah, I've had great feedback, you know, from the running community. I think people understand what we do, and they've enjoyed, my runners have especially loved getting a behind the scenes look at what really goes on, what specifically went on with me. And then my friends, folks don't know who Cree is. He's race director for the Denver Colfax Marathon. He's a titan in the running industry. He's done a bunch of everything, but he's also a stage 4 cancer survivor. And so what he and several other cancer survivors have said as they read my book is, I wish I had this when I was diagnosed. This should be required reading for any new cancer patient and their family. And, you know, what more could I ask for to be able to be of actual use to people in this horrible situation? It would be really nice.
Yeah, that's great. All right, and we promise we won't eat up your entire day here, but we want to pick your brain for a little bit of free advice. I want to go back to something you said earlier, which is has been a little bit of a recurring theme in our 6 Minute Mile newsletter and a couple of podcasts, yeah. But most of our running buddies take the attitude of, hey, I'm a runner. I don't need to worry about lower body workouts. Or what, that's yep. Missing the point. That's what I do. I'm all set there. Maybe I'll go to some push-ups instead of some gym or something, but. What's if you're sitting next to someone on an airplane, they say, yeah, I'm a runner. I could really use some, I've heard I should be doing more lower body strength training. What's your 60-second advice? What are your go-to moves that you recommend for runners where we need help?
So I like to ask runners, say, okay, have you heard of an IT band? The answer is always, yeah. Have you heard of plantar fasciitis? The answer is yes. And okay, those terms are not normal nomenclature that regular people know what an IT band is. And most people still don't know what an IT band is. And the reason you know what an IT band is because yours probably hurts.
It gets injured.
And that's because you are weak and inflexible. And with runners, and we tend to have those similar injuries or not even injuries. They're not injuries. They're pain. They're sources of pain. It's the IT band and the sciatica and plantar fasciitis. And those are issues caused by tightness and weakness. And so what runners tend to do is they skip the stretching, they skip the strength training, they run, ow, my knee hurts, ow, my IT band hurt, ow, my feet hurts, and they keep going until they're absolutely miserable, and then their body says no more. And so that doctor or that runner goes to a doctor, which is very expensive, and the doctor sends them out for some scans, which usually there's nothing, unless you've had a traumatic fall or a twist. There's rarely an actual damage to your body. And then what, after you have that expensive scan, they say you're going to go to an expensive physical therapist and you're going to do lateral gait and you're going to do lunges and you're going to do step ups and you're going to do chicken wings. And so what I like to tell runners is you can ignore it now and you can go through all of these paces and all of these expensive appointments for a PT to tell you to do chicken wings and lateral gait and lunges, or you can do what I'm telling you up front and you can run further, faster and pain-free in the very near future and save yourself all the agony and all the expense. So I am clearly very passionate about that subject.
No, that is great perspective because look, whatever the statistics are, 95% of people will wrestle, 95% of runners will wrestle with those issues. So isn't it a better way to live your life to prevent those rather than to try to cure them after the fact?
Yeah, there's self-inflicted wounds. And if you look at our fastest running athletes, track athletes, you go to a track meet, that is butt capital of the world. I mean, those folks do lots of squats and lunges and hip, you know, so if you actually want to be faster, maybe do what the fast people do. Strength training, again, further, faster, pain-free. Those are goals every runner should be interested in. And I actually have a video on, it's on the cover of fitness.com. It's free. It's a 12-minute workout. If you
Good. We will link to that.
Yeah, do it every other day. And it's called Strength Training for Runners. And once you start doing it every other day, then I will expect you all to reach out to me on social media and say, wow, Fitz, I just PR'd again. And wow, Fitz, my hips don't hurt. My back doesn't hurt and blah, blah, blah. Because I like
love
that.
Other one in the real quick category. We are fascinated by your idea that you can add 10 years to someone's life. So what's the idea behind that?
You know what? That was the start of my brand Fitness, is tacking 10 years of quality life upon everyone who I come across. And so that's why I love mass media, mass impact. But yeah, you have so much control over your life. And when I talk to kids, they say, who wants to be 90 or who wants to be 100? They all put their hands up. Who wants to be 90 and stuck in bed all day? Nobody puts hands up. Who wants to be the breakdancing grandma or grandpa? And, you know, all the hands go up. And so it's not just about living long. It's about living well.
Absolutely.
And for the most part, if you do what I tell you to do, you will get where you want to go. You got to watch what you put in your mouth. I have exact formula for weight loss. It's a simple math, science-based formula for achieving your goal weight. You work out regularly, cardio, strength, balance, flexibility. You get some sleep. You avoid the cranky people. It's not so complicated. You should have a nice quality life in front of you.
I love that one. All right, we'll hit you with a couple rapid fire questions. We've done with a few other guests, so we'll dive into it. Favorite movie of all time.
Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Oh, no one said that yet. What a great one! That's excellent. favorite book of all time. You're not allowed to say one of your own.
Pushing the Envelope by Harvey McKay, because it made me a much better negotiator.
Well, that has not come up. The Envelope. So that's how you get $250,000 per race announcing appearance because you're right now, right?
Yeah.
If you'd have dinner with one person, dead or alive, who would it be?
Abraham Lincoln.
Oh, that's a good one. Who is going to play Fitz in the Hollywood movie?
My daughter, Ginger. She is Fitz 2.0, the new and improved version. She is just as noisy, equally bubbly. Yeah, she's me. And she's now.
Excellent. Morning workout, afternoon workout, evening workout. What?
All of the above, but if I had to choose one, I would go morning.
Yeah, that has to be an answer for one of the creators of the Morning Mile. Love it. I think you've already answered this one. You always work out with music, right?
Not if I'm out in nature. I really love to hear the birds and the crickets. I love to be alone in the woods and just absorb the world, the earth. Yeah.
Love it. If you rewind time, as a parent, do you think the iPhone is a net plus or net negative for American society?
I didn't let my children have them until they were 15, 16. So
what a cruel mom. Oh, that's inhumane.
Evil mom with no social media. Ginger only is allowed to have Instagram now because she's also race announcing. So yeah, I I want to keep tabs on them. So I'm going to say it's a positive, but you've got to be a tough, evil parent like I am and have control over it.
It is a tough one, right? Yeah. So last one, who when you think about your mentors or your influencers over time, who sticks out?
There's quite a few. Joe Cerulli locally with the health industry, Jack LaLanne, the godfather of fitness, man.
Oh, right.
You know, he made a lasting impact on society. I would love the opportunity to be a household name only for the fact that I'd be able to help so much more people. And within the running industry, it's got to be Rudy Novotny, because he's the one who reached out and said, hey, come do this with me. And he showed me the ropes, and I'll be forever grateful for that.
That is so cool. Well, thank you so much. You've been such a good sport with us, indulging all our silly questions.
For all of your listeners, I would love to hear from them. If they reach out, I'm very communicative. I'm always looking for new running friends.
I love it. Hey, thank you so much, Fitz, and best of luck with everything in business and health. And no, it's been a delight. We hope to re-encounter you very soon.
Thank you, and get to work, everybody. Bye.
Ciao. Take care.